Trae Young has returned to the Hawks rotation. Welcome to the Hawks Report, the podcast from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that gives you the stories behind the score. I'm Lauren Williams, the Hawks beat reporter at the AJC, and I think the biggest thing that we should be talking about is Trae Young is back, Daniel Salerson. Of course, the Hawks are still locked into the 10th seed, but we've seen some good things out of Trae and his return to the rotation. If you're listening to us for the first time, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have a different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
And welcome back. I think the thing that a lot of people are excited about is that their star point guard is back in the rotation after missing 22 games since February 24th while rehabbing from an injury to his left fifth finger. I believe there was a torn ligament and he had to undergo surgery. And he was spending time rehabbing that. But the good news is Trae Young is back, Daniel.
It was good to see him on Wednesday night against the Charlotte Hornets. And I think, we talked about on the last week's show when we thought he might be back and we didn't get the injury designation report and we're like, okay. But then, of course, the news broke that he could return on Wednesday against Charlotte. So I'm like, okay, he's coming back, which is what we wanted to see. We wanted to see him back a few games before the regular season ended. That way he can get some conditioning in, just see how he worked with the brace, how he just felt, if he was comfortable with, being back out there. So it was good to see limited minutes, but he was perfect from the field, which was nice. Had double-digit assist in only 20 minutes as well. So Trae was out there being Trae, and he only played 20 minutes, but the 20 minutes he played, it was great to see. I thought he played well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that stuck out to me in what helped him be kind of perfect in the field is, as far as shooting-wise, it seemed like he was being very judicious with his spots. He wasn't forcing anything. He was going within the flow of the game. I think the only thing that, might, be an argument against him, working within the flow of the game is that he had five turnovers. And that's kind of, you don't want to say...
You don't want to say expected, but
yeah,
understood, maybe?
It's understood that a guy coming back from injury might press things a little bit with trying to find his teammates for shots. And again, I just liked that he wasn't jacking shots up and that he was working for the most part within the flow of the game. I think some of those turnovers came when, Charlotte was blitzing him and doubling him. And he kind of talked about that post game and sort of what led to some of those turnovers. But it was really good to see. Ended the night, as you mentioned, perfect from the field with 14 points. Solid return in 21 minutes from being away from the game for, pretty much a month. But here is what Trae had to say as far as being back and how it felt in terms of his hand.
It feels good. My hand feels good. Thanks to working with Mo for the past couple weeks or months. And so it's been fun, but I feels good.
So I think the biggest thing that we also noticed is that you mentioned it. He was playing with a brace on his left hand. It was kind of like a rubber band of sorts that was wrapped around his ring finger and his pinky finger on his left hand. And it just sort of provided, it seemed like, some stability for him. He mentioned post-game that, you know, he didn't really need to wear the brace, but that doctors were also trying to outfit him for a bigger brace. So I don't know, obviously, what goes on in his medical meetings, but I think it's a good idea that he continues to wear. Obviously, he has to adjust to playing with it. We saw that when he initially injured his finger back in February, that even though it was on his non-shooting hand, it was affecting, you know, his dribbling, his passing, and things like that. So, of course, with that brace on, it's going to be an adjustment in terms of some of the passes that we might be used to seeing him make. But he didn't, other than the 5 turnovers, I don't know if it really affected him too much. But here's what he had to say as far as the adjustment he had to make with wearing the brace.
Yeah, I mean, so yesterday or 2 days ago was the first day I was able to take these bands off and try to spread my hands like and make a 5. But so I don't necessarily have too much strength there. So I don't necessarily have to play with the brace, but I'm playing with it just for my sake and just for my mental, and I can swipe down at balls or passes and not even worry about it. And so that's why I'm wearing it. And I mean, it helped tonight. It doesn't necessarily affect my palm or that side. It's just the other side of the hand, not letting my fingers go all the way back. So,
but yeah, you know, of course it stinks that, you know, Trey's return came in a loss to the Charlotte Hornets. And of course the Hawks finished the season 1-3 against the Hornets, who continue to be their kryptonite for whatever reason. You know, in the past, in those first 2 games, I was saying, or I thought, oh, you know, maybe because they don't have Terry Rozier anymore, who has historically been a Hawks killer, the Hawks can kind of pull together these last 2 games. But, you know, Charlotte had the return of Miles Bridges. Brandon Miller continues to play really well. And, you know, with the starters on the floor, the Hawks were looking pretty good. But of course, that fourth quarter, we saw a good opportunity for some of those young guys. And we'll be sure to talk about that a little bit more. But we still want to stick with Trey's return. I was looking at our show sheet, which mentioned Quinn talking about Trey, which you guys will hear as well. But I think one of the things that, you know, pleasantly surprised me is, yes, sure, there were moments in watching the game that you could see that Trey was trying to get his conditioning back, but it was really, really great to see that his speed hasn't been totally affected. Obviously, as the game went on, that kind of changed a little bit and the pace of the game kind of slowed down a tiny bit, but I mean, Trey is still Trey. We were still seeing him make some of those pump fakes, some of those fake passes, the behind the back pass that he likes to go to. We saw some incredible finds. You know, again, we mentioned he had 11 assists, and you know, he was finding Bogey for some shots, and it might have been just what Bogdan Bogdanovic needed to break out of that little shooting slump he had against the Heat on Tuesday night, where he seemingly couldn't buy a bucket. I think that might have been one of Bogey's, you know, worst nights so far this season as far as shooting. And he's had some pretty bad nights, but it seemed like having Trey Young back in the fold kind of reinvigorated Bogdan Bogdanovic a little bit. And we saw him go 5 of 10 from 3, 6 of 11 from the field. He ended the night with 19 points and 8 assists, which is great for Bogey. But I think it's good that we're seeing his shot fall again, particularly as they get ready to face a team like the Timberwolves and then Indiana, who we know likes to shoot lights out. And he also found like several guys like Garrison Matthews, who started last night, Wednesday night, with Jalen Johnson out with a right ankle sprain again for, what, it's like the 3rd time within the last month that Jalen has had to deal with some ankle injuries, but Garrison played really well, continued to play within the flow of the game. And one of the things that was really cool in watching Wednesday night's game is that now Garrison is officially on the leaderboard in terms of three-point shooting percentage. He needed to reach 82 makes, and he, I think, hit 83 because he went 2 for 9, and his first three-point make of the night was the 82nd three-pointer he's made this season. And so now I believe he leads the league in three-point shooting percentage at 46.2%. Pretty good, right? That's really impressive. So, of course, some good things in that Charlotte game. Again, like I said, we'll touch on the not so good things. But yeah, I think Quinn Snyder was pretty happy with how Trae Young looked in his return to the rotation. Quinn kind of kept Trae within his usual rotational flow, subbing him out with about 6 minutes left in the first quarter and then bringing him back for the final, you know, 3 minutes. That's usually how it goes, because you'd have DeJounte Murray leave toward the end of the first quarter, and Trae would kind of run with a bench unit for, you know, the first few minutes of the second quarter. And so he kind of stuck within the usual flow of things. And then we kind of saw the substitution pattern change a little bit when they got back from locker room at halftime. But I mean, there was one moment where it was obvious that Trae was kind of getting his wind back, because, you know, they forced a turnover, and I believe it was Bogdanović inbounding the ball, but they had to wait like a little bit before they could inbound the ball, because Trae was kind of, you know, squatting down, and like it looks like he was catching his breath a little bit, and Snyder kind of looked at him like, are you good? And, you know, Trae kind of just gave like a little, like, I just need a minute sort of signal. And then they eventually got playing again, and it didn't seem like it was an issue again. So who knows what went on in that particular moment. But yeah, here's what Quinn Snyder had to say about Trae's return to the lineup.
It seemed comfortable to me. There was one play in front of our bench where he went after a loose ball with his left hand, picked up a steal. He finished left-handed, you know, with a little, you know, scoop shot. So, you know, there's a process. It'll come quick for him. But like I said, you know, you anticipate, you know, kind of getting reacclimated. But the biggest thing for me was his conditioning, and it seemed like he was, I have to ask him, but it didn't look like he was dragging.
So some good things all around, some not so good things, as I keep touching on. But I think for the most part, you know, people are very happy to have Trae back in the rotation. Of course, there's always stuff floating around regarding what relationships look like, what people think about, but his teammates were glad to have him back in the fold. And here's what Vic Krejci had to say about Trae being back.
It was awesome. He played, you know, he played really good. And I'm excited about, you know, the next. I mean, he had 11 assists in 20 minutes, so that's crazy. So, you know, again, I think when he was on the floor, you know, the ball was moving well. You know, we got a lot of open shots. That's why we were able to take that lead. So, you know, once we get the full squad back, I feel like it's going to be even better.
So, yeah, of course, we'll touch on some of the not so good things that happened in Wednesday night's game. Of course, we still have to talk about that double overtime loss to the Miami Heat on Tuesday night. The Hawks are playing on a back-to-back, but we have to take a break first. This is the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
And And welcome back to the Hawks Report, everyone. So as I kept teasing throughout the show, we've seen some really good things over the course of these last two games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and some not so good things. Of course, part of the not so good things since we last talked to you last week was a really bad and ugly loss to the Nuggets. We won't touch on that one too much. But then some of the good things that we saw, of course, was them pushing Tuesday's game to double overtime against the Heat. Of course, part of the not so good things is that you could tell that this team was, both teams actually were gassed in that overtime period, both of them, because it couldn't seem like anybody could hit a shot. You know, the game was tied at 101. And then between the two of them, I think they scored 20 points between the two overtime periods, which is a little, you know, shaky. DeJounte Murray played almost 50 minutes on Tuesday night. Bogdan Bogdanovic played 45 minutes. There were some heavy minutes on Tuesday night. And I think that, you know, I think it bled over into some of the decisions that were made on Wednesday night, particularly because the Hawks do have some big matchups against the Timberwolves on Friday, and then they wrap up their season in Indiana on Sunday. Of course, they have the play-in, so they have to be, I think, a little bit judicious as far as how they, you know, use guys going down this final stretch of the season. And so they rested DeAndre Hunter, who also played some heavy minutes on Tuesday night. They sat DeJounte Murray, citing a right hamstring or right quad contusion. And then they also rested Wesley Matthews with the right hamstring strain. So they're resting guys to, I'm sure, prepare. But Quinn Snyder didn't really want to, you know, use that as an excuse for what happened on Wednesday night. And he is cognizant, and he mentioned being cognizant of the amount of workload that he's, you know, handing out to his players. And here's what he had to say.
You know, guys were chipped maybe 10 minutes off what they regularly play. You know, and we obviously, it's an opportunity for, you know, the guys on the bench. And, you know, they got to the foul line. Worth and Bruno just got fouled. So I felt like we competed. And, you know, obviously you always point to things you can do better. But, it was good to see some of those guys happen. I think they work. You know, a lot of those guys are, whether it's, you know, Kobe or Dylan, V, you know, that old Trent, those guys, you know, they put time in. So for them to have an opportunity to play was good.
But yeah, we mentioned Bogey playing heavy minutes on Tuesday night, but he was back and he played on Wednesday, but he did not play the entire fourth quarter, sitting after 22 minutes. Capella played only 22 minutes. I think the only confusing person who didn't play in the fourth quarter that you probably would have expected was Garrison Matthews. But I wonder if, you know, because he didn't really play a lot on Tuesday. He only played 21 minutes on Tuesday. I wonder if it's just because he is such a key role player at this point of the season that, you know, Snyder does have to factor that in. And as we mentioned, he also didn't play in the fourth quarter. And so, yeah, we got to see some young guys in action in that fourth quarter. And I think that's kind of what some of the not so good was. Obviously, I think they're inexperienced because I think the average age of the guys who played in that fourth quarter would probably be about, 21? You had Trent Forrest, who, you know, is the oldest of the five that closed out Wednesday night's game. Kobe, who just turned 20 last September. Mo Gay, who is 21? V. Krejci, 23? So some really young guys, and the average length of experience between the five of them is probably 4 years. Versus the Hornets were playing some guys down the stretch who've been in this league for 5-6 years, minus Brandon Miller. And so I think that's kind of where you could see some of that inexperience come to light. They had, I think, like back-to-back turnovers on shot clock possessions, and that just shows you some of that indecisiveness that a young guard like Kobe might have when he's fully running the show. But I think the good thing is it's pivotal minutes that you want your young guys playing. And if the Hawks had been in a position where they hadn't had as many injuries as they had, and maybe they were in a better position in the seeding, we would have been seeing these young guys play minutes like this earlier in the season. But considering, like I said, you had some heavy minutes the night before for the veterans, you know, they're in the 10th spot in the play-in, so they are going to the postseason. Obviously, you still want this team to be competing to try and maybe get that 9th seed and get some home court advantage. But yeah, I mean, it's a big step for these young guys to be playing these minutes, and it's a big part of their growth. And so I guess I can't really hate on it too much if I'm using some colloquial terms, just because even though, you know, the loss is still a loss, it's experience that, you know, they wouldn't be able to recreate in practice.
I think if they would have beaten Miami, whether it was overtime or not, I think the strategy may have been a little different, because I think there was still a bigger chance that they could reach 9. We'd still need some help from Chicago losing, but I think they would have been, would they have been tied with them if they would have, I know that Chicago owns a tiebreaker, but they would have been tied, right? Because Chicago lost mm-hmm. to New York that night. So mm-hmm.
they would have been tied
with 2 to yeah, go.
They would have been tied. Now with the loss, they're 1.5 games back from Chicago. So you kind of have to hope that maybe Chicago loses to the Pistons on Thursday night, which
Chicago basically has to go 0-2 and Atlanta has to go 2-0 in order, or would have had to go. I think, I don't know if they can still get it or not. Either way, I think that changed the strategy a little bit for Quinn after that double overtime loss. One, like you mentioned, some of the starters played a ton of minutes. And then two, thinking, well, it pretty much seems like we're locked in the 10. Let's make sure our guys are healthy going in, because I think they know they're capable of beating Chicago, whether it's in Chicago or in Atlanta. But I think they want to make sure that everyone's good, especially with Trey only playing 20 minutes. He knew he wasn't going to get his normal full rotation. Jalen Johnson was already out with that ankle sprain. Let's get DeJounte Murray a day of rest, even though, I mean, it could have been, you know, an injury like you mentioned, but I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the minutes that he played. So, but Vit Krejci said it post game. He said the biggest thing, I think, with that lineup in the fourth was inexperience. I mean, you nailed it right on the head. And he said, I don't think he knows that these guys are capable of playing well, but one, they don't, that lineup did not play a lot with each other, number one. So that plus the inexperience that he mentioned, I think was why you saw what they saw. So I wasn't really upset about the loss to the Hornets, because I figured if this is a full healthy lineup, I think, I mean, they played well enough for three quarters before, you know, all the starters sat out for the fourth. I thought they would have taken, you know, taking the Hornets and won that game. But I think with the circumstances being the way they were, I rather see some of those guys get heavy minutes in the fourth. Like you mentioned, some of the young guys, some of the guys don't get to play a lot, because again, one, you never know when their number is going to get called. And two, I think it's a little bit of a confidence booster knowing, you know, how they can do in real game situations. That was a clutch situation that they had to play in. Despite it being the Hornets, doesn't matter. It's an NBA game. I think those situations are more important than the actual result itself. When it comes to having those guys in the fourth.
All right, everyone. Just a little bit of breaking news before we get back into talking about what is ahead for the Hawks, just because I think this breaking news will be highly impactful of potentially what unfolds over the next couple of weeks for the Hawks. But we finally have an update on Onyeka Okongwu and then also Jalen Johnson. Of course, by the time you guys are listening to us, it's not going to be breaking news, but it is still relevant to make sure that we have it in the show, particularly because we're getting it during the show. So as far as Jalen Johnson, who sprained his ankle in Tuesday's game against the Heat, the team took an MRI of his ankle yesterday and on Wednesday. and it revealed a grade 2 lateral ankle sprain, and he will be reevaluated in approximately 3 weeks. So reevaluated isn't even a return to play target date. It's reevaluated. And as far as Onyeka, he had a surgical procedure on Tuesday in Southern California. So he went home for this surgery to address ongoing inflammation in his left big toe. Because remember, he'd been dealing with a left big toe sprain for probably about the last, you know, month or so. And he will be reevaluated in approximately 4 weeks. So that tells you that for next Wednesday's playing game, the Hawks will not have Onyeka Okongwu or Jalen Johnson. That's a big blow for this team.
A very big blow. I mean, that's two of your big men down low and what they've been able to do this year. And we talk about the depth of this team and how it's lacked a lot during the year when there's injuries have hit, and those two are going to be out now. And let's be real, I don't know if this team's going to get to 3 to 4 weeks. That'd be a really big shocker, because that means they'd probably have to go through the Boston Celtics in order to do that. But really kind of crushing blow, and kind of sums up how this team has been throughout the whole year as far as health-wise. I think that's been a big factor into why they are only playing in that 9-10 game instead of maybe having a playoff spot. Is a lot of it has to do with the injury. So Jalen's been playing so good too, and the fact that it's been that same ankle 3 times now, hopefully, you know, he gets the treatment that he needs. And Okongwu, again, we've been seeing bright spots from him throughout the year when he was available. So, man, to have this happen two games before the regular season ends, and then now, you again, most likely they're both done for the year, is you're right, it's a crushing blow to this team, and they'll just kind of have to figure out a way to fight through this if they can get through that play-in.
I mean, that's on top of not having Sadiq Bey. You know, they don't have a ton of reinforcements as far as young guys, because AJ Griffin has been dealing with an ankle injury as well. You have guys like DeJounte Murray dealing with a literal bruise, because he did, just to touch on what you mentioned earlier about them resting him, he did hit his leg on someone, I remember, because I remember him shaking his leg out. So he's definitely dealing with something there. It's just a tough blow. I think a lot of people have had the sentiment ever since, I think, Jalen sprained his ankle the second time, that they should just wrap the season up. And I think the thing, too, is that Johnson has been a pivotal player in their matchups against the Bulls. He, you know, so it definitely comes as a big blow. Obviously, you have Trae Young back, but part of what this team needs is size, and missing Okongwu, missing Johnson, missing Bay. That's a lot of size in the front court. And I mean, the good thing is Bruno Fernando has been playing really well. Maybe the Hawks have caught a break because Andre Drummond was also dealing with injuries that he sustained on Tuesday night. And he's been a Hawks killer on the boards. So we'll see how things shake out. But even if the Hawks do make it past the first play-in game, they have to play either, as of right now, the Heat or the 76ers. And without size, that's a tall task.
No, that is a very tall task. You mentioned with Embiid being back for Philadelphia, Miami with Bam Adebayo. Yeah, and the Heat are also, again, one of those teams that no matter what seed they are in the playoffs, they seem to do really well there. But yeah, the first task is to get through Chicago. The first task is to stay as healthy as possible through these last two games. That's really the only goal. You basically feel like you are locked in the 10. It would take a miracle to get to 9. So you use these two games, mix and match some things, get Bruno some work, figure out what your rotations are going to be like for the playoffs, because now you're going to have a completely different lineup with Johnson and Okongwu out for good. So for me, for the Pacers in Minnesota, it's just, let's see what they can do. Let's see how these guys look, and we'll see what happens next week when they face Chicago.
We will see what happens next week when they face Chicago. And of course, we'll be right here along with the rest of you watching. Who knows what next week's podcast might be. We could be preparing for a second playing game, or we could be wrapping up the season. Until then, I'm Lauren Williams, the Hawks beat reporter here at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. As always, joined by Daniel Salosin, my trusty handy-dandy producer, and we'll be back with you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents...
Hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny...
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at AJC.com/hip-hop.